Hello, everyone, and welcome back to SCADcast. Thank you for joining us for On Creativity. I'm Matt Nickley. On April 23rd, the final episode of Will and Grace will air on NBC, closing the curtain on 11 seasons of landmark television that spanned three decades. It was the first American television series with principal gay characters, and its influence reverberates to this day. Directed in its entirety by the legendary James Burroughs, Will and Grace shows how the best sitcoms can make us think and move us to tears while laughing out loud. Along with helping shape modern television, the series also magnified the careers of its primary stars, Deborah Messing, Sean Hayes, Megan Mullally, and today's special guest, Eric McCormack. McCormack was the 2020 Impact Award honoree at SCAD ATV Fest in February, and SCAD students across majors found tremendous inspiration in his enduring career and lessons. His enthusiasm, humor, and charm made him a mentor our students won't soon forget. He encouraged young artists to pursue the stories and works that matter most to them, to follow their inner compass and create with heart. During the festival, Paula Wallace sat with McCormack, and the two explored the world of Will and Grace, what McCormack is pursuing in the future, and how television is evolving before our eyes. In true sitcom fashion, they had a studio audience of their own and four lucky SCAD Entertainment Arts students, who you'll hear from as well. From SCADcast, this is On Creativity, a conversation between Paula Wallace and Eric McCormack.
Eric, thank you so much for being here at ATV Fest, and congratulations on your Impact Award.
Thank you, Paula. Thanks so much for that.
I mean, on the impact of Will and Grace.
It's kind of overwhelming in a slow way. I mean, it was not a show that we ever, when we started, we didn't think we'd have an impact. We hoped to just stay on the air, and we hoped to be funny. Mm-hmm. And I would say even when we finished, though we were starting to get people coming up going, you know, it's easier to talk to my mother now about my sexuality now that she loves Will and Grace. Mm-hmm. It still didn't hit. It was not till 2012, in fact, that Joe Biden on Meet the Press, out of the blue, said that he thought that Will and Grace had done more to advance marriage equality than anything else.
Wow.
And Deborah phoned me, I phoned Max, and it was just like, wow, because we've been off the air for 6 years at that point. You don't think you're making any impact, except for the few people that were watching Lifetime or something, to suddenly realize that it had hung around and another generation had found it. And then, of course, to come back is to really feel that there was an impact that is incredibly...
So 11 seasons?
11 in total, yeah.
11 seasons, wow. That's a huge impact.
Yeah, and the fact that it wasn't just 11 in a row, which is hard for any show because everyone gets tired of you, that we went away and came back 11 years later and were welcomed back because it could easily have gone the other way. You know, it would be very easy to say, really, they're back? Why? but... it was great to be those characters again and make a new impact. Because a lot of young people found the show this time around that hadn't seen it.
Yes. With 11 seasons of Will and Grace under your belt and the perspective that that brings, what do you think that longevity says about the timeless appeal of the characters, the plot lines, and the show?
Well, you know, I spent my 20s in the theater, but I got my first television job just before I turned 30, and it's been pretty much all television for 25 years. And I'm as much of a viewer as I am as an actor. You know, when a show hits me, like when Seinfeld really landed.
I was going to ask you.
Yeah, I mean, the shows that hit me when I was a young man, MASH or All in the Family, I mean, they made an impact on me, for sure. Once I became an adult, it's like, what do I want to watch? I don't watch a lot. So when I watch something, it's got to land with me. And I think of those four characters on Seinfeld, cast of friends, people that you want to be with. And that's the most moving part, is to realize that the characters have become something on their own, that they are voices for great writers. For one thing, we have great writers, always have. But that people want those four characters in their homes all the time is pretty profound.
That's true. Yeah, you're such an important part of so many people's lives after 25 years. In a time of filters and laugh tracks, Will and Grace is still filmed in front of a live audience. How do real reactions inform your performance and your energy?
Oh, it's everything. And in fact, people, I think, forget that the best shows, Donald and the Family, Cheers, through the years, were shot in front of a live audience. But there was that period in the 60s where that all went away, and the Gilligan's Islands and the Brady Bunches were just a laugh track. We've never had a laugh track. We throw jokes out if they don't get a laugh in front of the 250 people in our audience. It's got to be real. And in fact, the more frustrating thing sometimes is that the laughs are so long, you got to cut them for television. It's too much. And so I'll watch the episode air and go, I got a huge laugh on that. Why did they trim that? But it's a good problem to have. You know, it's great to have that gauge. After Will and Grace ended, I did a pilot of a new show, which they were calling a hybrid. It was kind of the way How I Met Your Mother was done, which was, it was shot like a sitcom, but there was no audience. And I just couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand not having the real laughs there. Mm-hmm. And it's not just laughs, but at this point, after these three seasons, people would wait months to come to see the show and would go crazy. And we had this fantastic comedian named Roger for the whole 20-year run. It was always him, and he would keep everybody's energy up, and so it meant the world. It wouldn't be the same show without him.
So he would come in and between takes?
He would describe to them what's going on. That's Jim Burrows, the director, and that's the thing. And we could never hear. I've heard, my wife came to see the show, like tapings of the show, I think 150 of our 250 episodes. She's heard Roger's act a lot. But she says, I love it, because it's what he does to keep, otherwise to sit and watch television for 4 hours getting shot can be tiresome, but he keeps the energy alive. And then we've always, my favorite thing about the show, I think, are the outtakes. We have a lot of fun. It's very rare that we don't mess around.
I bet. Our SCAD grads contribute to all different aspects of the television industry. Who are some of the unsung heroes on the set, other than your comedian friend?
The obvious ones, Jim Burrows, legendary director, got his start on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, directed every single one of our episodes. And so he's the fifth Beatle. He's what we rely on. Unlike a lot of shows, single camera shows, where the crew is kind of there from the beginning, with a sitcom you rehearse for a few days, like you would theater. So there's a lot of crew positions that don't show up till right near the end, like our camera guys. The lighting is happening, but not around us. It's kind of happening when we're gone. So the key ones to us, particularly our props guys, because very few of the props are in the script. So every episode, we start the first scene, is almost always in the apartment. Grace walks in, and Jimmy Burrows would say, McCormack, what are you going to be doing? And I'll say, I'm going to be in the kitchen. And I turn to the props guys, and I go, and I'm going to make brownies. Yes, sir, brownies, sir. And he'd run off and get the thing. And then they'd see the scene that day, the writers would see the scene, and they'd decide, it's too long, we need the other character to come in sooner, and I realize I don't have time to make brownies, so I just say, forget the brownies, I'm going to be just stirring a soup. Soup, sir, yes, soup. And it was just, so our props guys were absolutely the unsung heroes, and our set, when you watch that show, of course we have Will's apartment, never changes, but there's at least one or two or sometimes three swing sets that are gorgeous, and Glenda Ravello, our set designer, nominated almost every year for an Emmy, which is getting harder and harder to do with a sitcom. But her sets are so gorgeous. My dear friend Peter Gursky, who is the set decorator, I mean, he does this to, you know, three sets a week. And it's, those are definitely the heroes of the show. And Lori Eskowitz, our costume designer, who doesn't do so much design costumes as shop like a crazy person. I mean, you look at what those two women have worn for 11 years and probably never twice in a row.
Gorgeous last night. I watched
they always
it last
look gorgeous.
Night.
And some of that stuff is really real life expensive. Mm-hmm. So it's I don't know how Lori does it with her budget, but
the competition for a viewer's attention is real. You recently started producing and directing. How do creators set their work apart in this really content-heavy landscape?
That's a good question. I think it's got to get more personal. Is the key. You know, there was a time when you knew you had to pitch a cop show, you had to pitch this, you were pitching to three or four networks, and you knew what they wanted, and you kind of gave into that. Mm-hmm. You tried to find a little bit of something different, but otherwise you were fitting a formula, and the formulas are gone now. I've just been pitching a couple of shows of my own to the streaming services now, and they're, what they have in common is that they don't fit any puzzle. I'm not trying to please anybody. I'm trying to say, well, I would like to please them. I'd like them to buy it. But I also know that if I'm going to make it, if I'm going to put my heart and soul into it, I've got to love it. Mm-hmm. And I don't require all of America to love it. It'll find its niche. That is the beauty of so many outlets and so much content, is you just need that little group of people that goes, I get you. Mm-hmm. I get your story. Mm-hmm. So I love that part.
I was wondering if you thought there was a genre that was particularly in demand.
Well, I don't tend to. With Travelers, I did a sci-fi for 3 years. Mm-hmm. With Perception, I solved crimes for 3 years. I don't need to solve crimes anymore. thank you very much. But so I tend to think outside of genres. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, I don't really want to do a vampire thing or this or that. I really want to tell grown-up stories that are complicated and that challenge viewers that have for a long time just accepted that this is the way you speak on television or these are the relationships. No, let's mess that up. Let's really mess that up.
Well, I can't wait to see what you're going to do next, then.
I can't tell you, but
I know.
But you can't wait.
I know. So we actually have a live studio audience joining us today, some of our SCAD students, and I know they have a lot to ask you, so I'm going to invite Lakin to join in.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi again.
I'm Lakin Giles, and I'm a performing arts senior. So next quarter, we're filming a completely SCAD-produced sitcom, and from an actor's perspective, what's the biggest thing you learned your first year filming Will and Grace?
That's a good one. I had to learn something that was a hard lesson, which is that I really did have to kind of be the straight guy on the show. As gay as I was, I had to be the straight man, and I had to be okay with that because so much of the humor on the show only works if somebody's setting it up and if somebody reacts to it. And I'm going to make myself sound 100 here, but you think of like Jack Benny or someone he was the star of his show, and yet he often didn't have the funny thing to say. Somebody else did, and his reaction was always this kind of... And that was the laugh. The laugh was how slowly he crossed his arms. And I had to find that. Jim Burrows said to me 3 or 4 episodes in, he said, just don't try so hard, just... you'll find it, and he was right. I couldn't compete with the crazy of the other three. I had to deliver the goods a different way.
Right. Thank you. So my name is Corey Graves. I am a film and television student, and I'm actually directing the SCAD-produced sitcom.
Fantastic.
And I've directed a few of our other ones, and we also do it in front of a live studio audience. So my question is, Jim Burrows has directed every single episode of Will and Grace. What kind of relationship did you have, as an actor, have with him that you think benefits the show? Like, what can the director do to really help bring out the story?
That's a great question, too. First of all, I think I'm so glad that you guys are actually attempting a four-camera sitcom because they're kind of dying. And yet, at the same time, because of the resurgence of Friends and all of that, I think you guys are discovering what it can be. And I think the really important thing is to, when you're looking at the history of them, to look at the great ones and look at the mediocre ones, because it's really easy to make a mediocre sitcom. It's harder to demand that the material be smarter. Just when you think of a joke that you realize you've heard before, be smarter, challenge the audience, for sure. But in terms of my relationship with Jimmy, first of all, that just about blew my brains out, because I like I say, I grew up with knowing who Jim Burrows was, that he co-created Taxi and Cheers, and so I had several auditions for Will, and I pretty much knew that I was the writer's choice. And I said, I guess we go to the network now. And they said, well, Jimmy has to see you first, and then we go to the network. And I went, Jimmy, and I went, Burrows. And I just, like, wet my pants, I think, right? Because it's, and that was so huge to get his approval. So I would say Jimmy realized early on, too, that his way into the material was often through Will as well, that I was going to kind of represent the audience of how they were receiving the wacky Jack and Karen guys. So he and I had a real, and also I think directorially, I think, and so he and I talked a lot. It was a great relationship. It was very collaborative. I wasn't afraid to pitch things, and he wasn't afraid, being the 800-pound gorilla in the room, he wasn't afraid to receive them and to collaborate. And I think the thing Jimmy did the best, two things. We never beat comedy into the ground. We rehearsed, it's the easiest job in town, we rehearsed very little, because once we had it, save it for tomorrow, because the writing was going to change or whatever. But to beat a joke, to beat a bit to death, was unnecessary. And also just, I think, to let the actors play. Sometimes you can't in a single camera show. There's just not time. There's just not time in a shoot day. But on a sitcom with four cameras in front of it, you got time, you got days, hopefully, to play around. And so just before you start directing everything, give everybody a shot at their gut instinct. Because I think sometimes the best comedy can come out of finding it rather than being told.
Hi, I'm Remy Kidd. I'm a freshman performing arts student. Yes. As an international actor like yourself, I have a heavy theatre and Shakespeare background. And I was wondering how you tapped into the American nuances in your American TV debut in Top Cops.
Wow.
The American nuances.
First of all, if you've seen any of the episodes of Top Cops I did, there were no nuances. Really quite terrible. That's a great question, too, because I also came from 5 years at the Stratford Festival in Canada and from theater in general. And Top Cops, like I say, didn't require a whole lot of nuance. But when I got out west of Vancouver from Toronto, where I'm from, and started doing some of the American shows, I had to bring my stuff down and bring it down. And the big show that had started that year in 92 was X-Files. And I auditioned for Chris Carter, I think, three or four episodes into the first season as a guest star. And I remember he said, okay, that was good. Do it again, just less. So I did it again, I did less. He said, yeah, okay, just less. I finally said that classic, I said, if I do anything less, I'll be doing nothing. And he said, yeah. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And then I saw David Duchovny and I went, oh, I get it. Like, really, just stand there and don't do anything. And it took me a long time. I would say I didn't get that style right until Travelers, which was just 4 years ago. I took me a long time to find that stillness, that sort of leading man thing. It wasn't required as Will, because I moved about like a mime most of the time. But when I could find it, I got it. So But yes, please study my top cops. It's everything you should not do. I have to finish one top cop story. The first episode I did, it was an anthology series about real cops and their story, their worst story. And I ended up playing several cops over a couple of seasons in Toronto. But one of them was a guy that was just in his garage barbecuing, and some maniac ran in and stole a wrench and went running down the street. And this guy grabbed his service revolver and chased him down the street. And ended up, the guy picked up a kid, like a 2-year-old kid with this wrench. And he said, it was one of those, you know, in a million years I could never make that shot again, but I did. And he picked the guy up and shot him in the head. This was entertainment. And but they wanted to make it as real as possible. And on the day, this guy really had been wearing really short red shorts, the cop, because he was off duty and barbecuing. And so that's what we did. And so I did take after take of me running down a suburban street in no shoes or socks and tight red shorts. And when it aired, it was my first big television thing to air, and my friend Chris phoned up. I said, so? And he said, you should never run again in your career. Don't run again. That's my advice to you. Don't run.
Okay. Hi. I'm Jack Heron. I'm a performing arts sophomore. And I was wondering, playing a character in Will and Grace that's just so iconic in pop culture, was wondering, how was the audition process for that character? And also, how was it approaching a gay character in a time where there wasn't that much gay representation in the media?
Well, the gay part was exciting because there weren't that many gay characters on television. It was no big deal. I'd played probably 5 gay characters on television and in theater before that. So that part of it was not scary to me. But it was scary to the network. And more than I realized till later on. And so it was the guy kind of running everything back then, his name was Don Olmeyer, and he basically said, there's no show. Unless we find a Will and a Grace, then I approve it, and it's got to be, there's no show. They have to find them together. There has to be chemistry, and I have to believe this. So it was, I think I had 7 auditions before I went in front of him and the network. But the first audition I ever had was for Max Muchnick, who created the show. I just did one take as I'm sitting here now, and he said, okay, just so you know, you never have to be more gay than that. It's funny, it's what my father said to me year after year. What he meant was, Max is the gay one of the two that created the show. He knew that he had to find that balance, that Jack could be off the charts. That was the purpose of that character, but that Will had to fit not just for Don Olmeyer or for NBC, but for the country. We had to say, not everybody's gay in the same way. The stereotypes are going to explode. I think I realized after the fact the pressure everybody else was under to find me. And they found me.
They found you.
I swear.
Well, this was amazing, and thank you to our great students, and thank you for being here and being a part of SCAD ATV Fest. We love you at SCAD.
It was all
come
over
back.
Too soon. Yes,
come
I'll come back.
Come back anytime.
I'm gonna actually enlist as a enlist.
I'm gonna
enroll
on a Bible or something. Yes. Well, you know, we have so many majors here. It's like you can do anything.
I haven't decided yet.
Okay, undecided. Undecided is our biggest freshman major. Yeah.
Well, thanks for having me. This was
very cool.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
I hope you enjoyed hearing from Eric McCormack. Be sure to tune into the final episodes of Will and Grace, airing Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on NBC. You can also relive the entire series by streaming it on Hulu. Thank you to the entire cast and crew of Will and Grace for a remarkable 246 episodes of laughter and joy, which we could all use a little extra of these days. Hearing McCormack describe pitching series concepts that break the mold speaks to all of us breaking routines and changing the way we live through social distancing. We are all adapting, inventing, and discovering how we can contribute to a world we don't recognize. Think about just a few of the ways you've changed your routine to stay productive and fulfilled. Explore how you can create within that space and how you can make use of materials you've previously overlooked. For those in the SCAD community, be sure to share your creations with all of us using the hashtag SCADWorks on social media. Thank you for tuning in to SCADcast and On Creativity, executive produced by SCAD president and founder Paula Wallace, with original music by SCAD alumnus George Lovett. From all of us in the SCAD community, stay safe, stay healthy, and stay active. We'll see you next time.